Blog Talk Radio.
For your God is, for your God is come to me. For your God is, for your God is come to me. I need your wisdom for this age. I need your wisdom for this age. For your God is, for your God is come to me. For your God is, for your God is come to me.
Well, hello and welcome, Gaias and fans of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, at our special time today, whether you're across town or across the globe. And if you're new to my show, here's where we discuss goddess as deity, archetype, and ideal, the feminine consciousness, right brain thinking, and how women of the West are being called upon to save the world. Yep, I'm going to keep reminding you, because we have to manage to empower ourselves to be up to that task. And I don't think it's going to happen in the traditional patriarchal or dominator way, but we'll talk more about that later in the show. And, of course, getting back to our special time, that's because we have a special guest calling in today from Greece. We have independent Greek scholar Harita Meni with us, and we're going to be discussing priestesses of wisdom, female philosophers of late antiquity, so stay tuned. And I certainly want to give a shout out to Lisa Thiel. It's her music you were listening to at the show's opening. That's just a tease of her song, Warrior Goddess, and I love the lyrics, Warrior Goddess, come to me. We need your wisdom in this age. So please go to her website, sacreddream.com, and hear more of her music and find out how to perhaps purchase or download more of her wonderful songs for your listening pleasure. Then, after we chat with Harita, we'll dip into our regular What's the Buzz segment when I share with you those bees buzzing around in my bonnet all this week, dying to get out. And today's What's the Buzz is going to be a little shorter than usual. The two topics we're going to talk about are the June Astro Flash by Flash Silvermoon. With this planetary alignment upon us, you have to hear what Flash has to say. And if you're one of my Facebook friends, you know we've been burning up the Facebook pages talking about starting the Red Spiral Door across the globe. So stay tuned to hear more about that. And I know most of you listen from the archives, but I still like to remind you and invite you to call in and comment during What's the Buzz, or certainly call in and speak to our guest, Harita. The number is 718-766-4662. And I want to say thanks to those of you who suggested I submit a demo tape to Oprah's network as she searches for her next host on her television network. I'll let you know how that goes. And if I can get it all together in time, because I'm finding out about this a bit late, I'm going to need your vote, so be ready, okay? And I want to also announce my special summer series I've planned to celebrate my anniversary here on Blog Talk. Can you believe it's already coming up on a year? Wow. And the three series that I have planned in celebration are Sacred Knowledge, Men and Goddess, and Sacred Destinations. So stay tuned with me through the summer and catch these special shows. And toward the end of today's show, I'll talk more about the guests I've scheduled during those three series and their topics, so stay with me. But without further delay, let me turn my attention to this week's guest. As I said, she's graciously calling us from Greece, Harita. Let me tell you a bit about Harita, and then we'll invite her to talk to us about the priestesses of wisdom. In case you don't know Harita, because she has been on the show before, and I know many in the goddess community know of her and her wonderful work, she's a Greek independent scholar of classical studies and women's history. She has presented cultural TV programs and has lectured at universities in Greece and the United States. She's the author of 5 books, as well as numerous articles published in Greek in the British and American magazines. So, Harita, welcome to the show.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for inviting me.
And first, let me just make sure, did I pronounce your last name correctly? Is it, because, you know, we never say, hello, Harita Mani, and you don't say, hello, Karen Tate. So I don't actually think I've ever heard you say your last name.
Well, if you were a Greek person, you would pronounce it like Mimi.
Ah, okay, Mimi. Okay, well, that's what we'll do, Harita Mimi. So, Harita, thank you for calling in from Greece. What time is it there?
Oh, it's a little after 9 o'clock in the evening.
Okay, well, we'll keep you awake.
That's fine. Well, Greeks don't go to bed until late.
Oh, that's right. You guys are dancing around with the plates and having the wonderful, baba ganoush and, don't even get me started. I'm so jealous.
Well, not baba ganoush, but more like souvlaki.
Souvlaki. Or moussaka, maybe?
Yes, moussaka. And actually, it's dinner time right now.
Oh, that's right, because you folks over there eat late in the evening. So, all right, well, I don't feel so bad for keeping you up so late.
That's fine.
Well, you know, I love the show topic you suggested, Priestesses of Wisdom, Female Philosophers of Late Antiquity. Why don't you start by telling us who was the most famous female Greek philosopher?
Well, the idea for this topic came to me from a movie that is just being released in the United States these days, but I got to see it in Greece just a few months earlier. It's a movie, Agora, or Agora, if I pronounce it the Greek way. And it's about precisely the most famous of the female philosophers of antiquity. Her name is Hypatia, if you pronounce it the English way, or Hypatia, if you pronounce it the Greek way.
Okay. And now, wasn't she from Alexandria?
Yes, she was from Alexandria of Egypt, and Alexandria at that time in the 4th century CE was a great place for education, a great place where the Greek civilization had flourished for centuries after the conquest of Alexander the Great. But Hypatia lived in a difficult time, very difficult time for educated Greeks, for pagan Greeks especially.
Well, give us some context for that. What was going on in Alexandria then? This was after Cleopatra and everything, wasn't it, just for some context?
Ah, yes, it's about 3-4 centuries after Cleopatra. And, it's a turning point between Roman antiquity and medieval times. Technically, this part belongs to Byzantine or medieval history, but Hypatia belongs to the older world, the pagan world. And, well, she was unlucky to live in that time because she was precisely caught in religious turmoil and conflict.
So are we talking about the turmoil because of maybe the Christian influence coming in at that time?
Well, yes. You see, the whole Greek civilization was very much identified with pagan ideals, and philosophers at that time were still under the influence of the old world. Also, philosophers like Hypatia, they were mathematicians, they were astronomers, and, they saw the sciences from the pre-Christian point of view. For example, Hypatia was a Neoplatonist philosopher. That means she was influenced by older philosophers like Plato and Pythagoras.
So not only did she have the problem she was a woman, but she was also, you know, thinking like these pagans, and the Christians just weren't going to have that.
Well, Ipatia herself tried to avoid getting caught up in religious conflict. She would associate with educated people of her time regardless of their religion. And her students were both pagans, Christians, maybe Jewish too, who knows. So she didn't discriminate on the basis of religion, and many of the educated Christians of her time thought of her very highly. One example is Synesios, who was one of her students and who later on made a career in the church.
Ah, well, is there something in particular that she, she is famous for, or is it just her overall body of work?
She was very much famous for her mathematical achievements. Unfortunately, none of her works has survived, and that's a very common phenomenon as far as women in antiquity is concerned. Only a few fragments of the work survive most of the time, and in this case, absolutely nothing has survived. But we know she wrote commentaries in mathematical works. We know that she was highly thought of for her mathematical achievements. We know she was also an astronomer. It's said that she could chart celestial bodies. It's also said that she invented the hydrometer, which was used to determine the relative density and gravity of liquids. And we also know that she could make an astrolabe, which was used for locating and predicting the positions of the sun, the moon, the planets, and the stars.
Wow, that's a pretty good resume. So,
a remarkable woman, yes.
And how do we know about her work? You know, in all her accomplishments, where is it? Did this body of knowledge stay safe enough for us to learn about it?
Well, one main source about her is Socrates Scholasticos, or Scholasticus. He's a 5th century author, a Christian, who wrote about the history of the church, and he thought of Hypatia very, very, very highly. So he describes her behavior, her character, how she would speak up in front of the high society of the city. She had great confidence because of her education, and everyone would admire her for her intelligence and her powerful character. He even claims that her education was above every other philosopher of her time.
So was he complaining about her, or was he bragging about her?
Well, he thinks that he admired her quite a lot.
Okay.
He even talks about her work as a teacher and how young people from all over the Roman Empire would come to her to be taught, and how she had quite an influence even on the ruler of the city, the prefect Orestes. And of course, it's the same source, Socrates Scholasticus, who talks about her death.
Now, you said that there's a movie. Is it out here in the United States right now? Because I haven't been paying attention much to movies of late. It's Agora is playing here in the U.S.?
I think it was just released in New York, and it's going to come to L.A. very soon, one of these days.
Okay. And so is she the central character of the movie? Is it about her life?
Yes, it's a biographical film. It's a historical drama. I was very, very impressed when I saw it, and so were the Spanish people. It's a Spanish movie. In Spain, it was the most successful film of 2009, and it won 7 Goya Awards. This is the Spanish equivalent of the American Academy Awards.
Wow. And now I don't think she met a very pleasant end. Is that I hate to, put the spoiler alert out here, but I guess, I'll say spoiler alert. I think didn't she meet a tragic end?
Yes, that's true, and that's also described in the movie, although it's described in a rather soft way.
Well, tell us the real story, Harita.
I can read you a short paragraph, a short passage from the history by Socrates Scholasticus. I think it's always best to go directly to the older sources. So, is it okay if I read a short part of that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Go right ahead.
Okay, so in the 5th century, Socrates says the following: "Yet even she, Hypatia, fell a victim to the political jealousy which at that time prevailed. For as she had frequent interviews with Orestes," remember Orestes was the prefect, the ruler of Alexandria, "it was falsely reported among the Christian populace that it was she who prevented Orestes from being reconciled to the bishop." This is about the bishop Cyril, a rather notorious bishop of Alexandria. This is my comment, not a comment of Socrates. But let me continue reading. "Some of them, therefore, the Christian populace, hurried away by a fierce and bigoted zeal, whose ringleader was a reader named Peter. They waylaid her returning home and dragged her from her carriage. They took her to the church called Caesareum, where they completely stripped her and then murdered her by scraping her skin off with sharp bits of shell. After tearing her body in pieces, they took her mangled limbs to a place called Kinaron, and there burned them. This action brought a lot of shame on Cyril and to the Church of Alexandria as well."
Oh.
That's what Socrates Scholasticus says. This is the most detailed account of her death. It's more or less a contemporary account. She was murdered during the spring of 415, if I remember correctly, 415 CE.
So, and this was all about political jealousy? I mean, that seemed to be what he said in the opening sentence, but is there more to it than that? I mean, considering I'm sure listeners, you know, aren't well-versed in the history of what was going on back then, you know, was this also about, you know, she was a different religion? I mean, was it bigotry? I mean, what do we speculate?
Well, it was a very conflicted era. There was a lot of turmoil that was both political and religious. And you know what? I think if we look deep, maybe all religious conflicts are political conflicts underneath. So it seemed like Cyril, the Patriarch of Alexandria, wanted to take complete control over the city. It seems that the pagans was in the way, pagans like Hypatia or like Orestes the prefect. And of course, you know, after he got Hypatia murdered, he didn't stop there. He went ahead and persecuted those he considered as heretic Christians and also the Jewish population of the city. That's also shown in the movie.
Wow. Was there ever any sort of apology issued from the church, you know, for any of this that you're maybe aware of?
Not that I know of. On the contrary, I think Cyril was canonized and he's honored as a saint both by the Catholic and Christian Orthodox Church.
Oh, my teeth are just gritting. Biting my tongue off here not to say things I want to say. Well, besides Hypatia, Harita, I can't wait to see the movie, first of all. And, you know, I think it's important that we're bringing her work, you know, bringing her work up, and I'm glad the movie is too, because she certainly deserves recognition. But there were other important female Greek philosophers too, correct?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Hypatia was not the only one. She's just the most famous one. We can talk a little bit about Sosipatra, who lived during the first half of the 4th century CE. She was born to a fairly wealthy family who lived right outside Ephesus of Asia Minor. Asia Minor is present-day Turkey. And Ephesus was a famous Greek city. You know of Artemis Ephesia, who was the patron deity of the city. Her temple there was one of the seven wonders of the world, just to give our listeners a little bit of context of what Ephesus was like in older times. So we know her story through another philosopher, another Neoplatonist called Evnapios. That's the Greek pronunciation. And her story is a little bit like a fairy tale. He talks about her as a wonder child, very pretty, very sweet character, everyone loved her, and when she was five, something very, very strange happened. Two mysterious older men arrived in her family estate, and they worked there, producing a very, very bounteous harvest beyond all expectation. And when they met the young Sosipatra, the five-year-old, they were so impressed that they asked their father to leave her there with them so that they could educate her for 5 years. And they asked him to leave them alone, to work there in the estate and teach Sosipatra. And the story says that that's what happened, and this was a time of initiation for the young girl. Well, maybe these people were not ordinary men. Evnapios says they may have been some kind of heroes or some kind of divine spirits. It seems that they were well versed in the mystical wisdom of the Chaldeans, the Babylonians. And that's what they taught to the young girl. It said that when she was 10 years old, she was able to describe events that she couldn't possibly know as if they were happening right there and then. So by the time her father returned, she already possessed extraordinary psychic and clairvoyant abilities. And from that point on, she was free to live her life the way she wanted. She was full of divine inspiration, as the story says. And she continued her education and was very knowledgeable on poetry, philosophy, and rhetoric. Later on, she married another philosopher, Eustathius of Cappadocia. He tells us that her surpassing, her biographer, tells us that her surpassing wisdom made her own husband seem inferior and insignificant. But still, he was a man cultivated with a lot of abilities. He was sent as a head of diplomatic mission to Persia by the emperor. And with her husband, they had three sons, one of which, Antoninos, became a significant philosopher and a theurgist. He could perform theurgy, which was a kind of spiritual magic. When she was a widow, she moved to Pergamon, another famous Greek city of Asia Minor. And she became friends with another Neoplatonist philosopher, Hesiod. He taught her sons. But she also became successful as a philosopher in this city because young people who came to Hesiod to study later on came to her and attended her lectures. So I think Sosipatra was quite a remarkable woman as well.
Sounds like she had a pretty cool wife. She didn't meet a tragic fate, or was her did she end her days more civilly?
Well, it seems that she was lucky. Her son, though, Antoninos, he went to Egypt. It's said that he became a student of Hypatia, although I can't tell you that for sure. But he also predicted that the ancient temples would soon be destroyed. And even after his death, he predicted that the shrines of Serapis, which were very, very important in Alexandria, would turn into a mass of stones. And that's precisely what happened, because that happened during the same time when Hypatia was murdered, more or less.
Well, we've covered some, you know, very important centers of ancient learning: Alexandria, Ephesus. What about Athens? That's really, I think, where most people attribute the home of the philosophers. Were there any famous women philosophers from Athens?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We think of Athens as a very, very patriarchal city. Of course, that's true. But that's also, it's not the whole picture. It's only part of the picture. Because remarkable women lived in Athens too, not just in classical Athens, but also at different times, such as in late antiquity, the time that we're dealing with right now. And one of these notable women is Asclepienia. I know her name is very difficult to pronounce. I'll say it one more time, the Greek way, Asclepienia. And she was also a philosopher and mystic. We know her life from an account in the Life of Proclus by Marinos, a writer who lived around her time. Her father was the Plutarch of Athens. We shouldn't confuse him with the older philosopher with the same name. That was a different Plutarch. This Plutarch was head of the Neoplatonist school at Athens, and he instructed both Asclepienia and her brothers in the philosophies of Plato and Aristotle. But he also had some mystical knowledge, and that was common at the time. Asclepienia flourished around 430 CE. Because at the time, philosophers, in a sense, were also mystics.
So that seems like a dichotomy, doesn't it? Or am I not understanding, the true role of what philosophers were back then?
Well, this is not classical Athens. Classical Athens existed something like 1,000 years before the time we're talking about. What happened is that the Neoplatonist movement chose certain elements from the philosophy of Plato and developed the mystical elements in his philosophy, and also selected parts of the Pythagorean philosophy, which also had mystical elements. So Neoplatonist philosophy was not purely rationalist. It had its rationalist side, it had its scientific side, but it also had a mystical side.
That's very interesting. Seems much more holistic that way.
Well, you know, things change over time, so it makes sense that philosophy would change over time and adjust to the needs of different people and different eras. Philosophers actually at those days were considered sacred people, and that applies also to women. They were often called divine. Sometimes they were respected, similar to goddesses.
Wow. Well, how did they, were they on par with priestesses of a temple, or were they more sacred for their academic knowledge, but there were also mystics, so...
I like to call them priestesses of wisdom, although they had no official priestly role. But part of their pursuit was, one of the main objectives of Neoplatonism was the union with the divine. So it's not far-fetched to think that female philosophers also had this goal. the union with the divine.
I see. Well, why do you think, Harita, that we know so little about these women today?
Isn't that strange? I remember when I first started researching these very interesting women, the Neoplatonists, my research started about 10 years ago. Wow, it's been so long. And at that time, it was just very, very, very difficult to find information about them. Now things are easier. If you go on the internet and you Google Ipatia or even Sosipatra or Asclepigenia, you can find some information about them. Although I suggest being careful because sometimes we get inaccurate information. Not everything we read is accurate. However, it's still surprising that these women are so little known. And, well, I tend to get suspicious because I've seen that happen time and again. Many remarkable women, many women who played an active role in the arts, in the letters, and many other parts of life and civilization are left to be forgotten. Well, maybe it's our educational system that doesn't particularly care about bringing to light these significant women. And that's such a shame because women lose part of our heritage and men lose too because this is part of our shared cultural heritage as human beings.
Well,
so
in a way, I guess it's... No, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think it's very much worth the trouble to do more research in this part of our history because, well, we do live in a sexist world. We already know that. We're told that, well, now women are equal to men, but we know they're not. So we still need to do a lot of work. We need to search, read, and bring to light everything important that women have done through the ages.
Well, you certainly have, a fan of that idea right here. I think March is Women's History Month, and we talked about that a good bit because it seems like when people are reminded of, how much history of women has actually either been lost or not written down. Now, in the case of these influential women, I have no doubt that it's probably hidden in the Vatican vault somewhere.
Figuratively speaking, or maybe even literally speaking.
Oh,
I'm thinking
literally. but you know, maybe figuratively. You know, I can't imagine them going out of their way to highlight the work of these important women. But I don't know whether you've been following what's been happening here in the United States. I don't know how outrageous this is if it's gone beyond our borders. But just in Texas, have you heard about the Texas Education Board rewriting the history books here?
No, I don't think I've heard of that.
Well, let me tell you. I mean, this maybe fits right in. You know how history gets rewritten or things get left out. I mean, literally, right now, conservatives in Texas are rewriting the history books to uplift all the conservatives and cut out the liberals. They are even cutting out people like Thomas Jefferson because he said that the United States was not founded on Christian ideals and he believed in the separation of church and state. And the Texas Board of Education is, stacked full of Christian conservatives, so they are literally rewriting the history books. So,
I'm amazed.
Well, and the scary part about it is, because Texas is such a huge state, they carry a lot of weight when it comes to, printing volumes of books. So unfortunately, it won't just be the minds of Texas students who are affected, because they purchase books in quantities and publish the books in quantities. These inaccurate, or distorted books are going to be going out to other states, too. So it's pretty scary, quite frankly. And so I can see, you know, I can see very easily where, especially the work of women, you know, somebody decided somewhere along the line in this patriarchal culture that, you know, we'll just stuff it aside and sweep it under the rug.
Well, that has been happening for centuries now. That wouldn't be new.
Well, let's you know, since we're sort of getting a little political here, why don't you tell us a little bit about everything we're not hearing a whole lot on the news about what's happening in Greece. I mean, all we heard is that there were riots in the streets because, you know, Greek benefits are, you know, they're trying to cut benefits back and things like that. I know you're an activist there in Greece, Harita. From your point of view, because our news is so distorted, what's actually going on there?
Well, the Greek economy is not doing well, which is not surprising because it's the same problem all over the world, more or less. But Greece has been hit pretty badly by the financial crisis. The state is in debt, and many Greeks are also in debt. So now the IMF has moved in to take care of our financial matters. They decided that the way that Greece can pay off its debt to the banks is by cutting down people's salaries and pensions. So they're taking money from us, from people who are already fairly poor, from grannies and grandpas who are trying to survive with a small pension. They're taking money from all these people in order to give this money to bankers who are already rich enough, I believe.
You know, Harita, that's what I...
people are... Mm-hmm. Yes,
well,
go
well,
on,
that,
please.
Well, that was what I thought was perhaps happening. You know, it's always on the backs of the poor. They try to balance the budget. But I didn't know what the structure was there. And, I mean, because it seems like we're seeing that across the globe, that, you know, the rich are just, you know, they're basically, you know, getting welfare from the state on the backs of, you know, individual citizens who can least afford to make them richer. It's outrageous, but at least you guys are out in the street. I mean, you know, here in the United States, I don't know, we're just way too complacent, and that really disturbs me. It feels like Americans, too many are really asleep, or they're angry at the wrong people.
Well, you know, sometimes activists in Greece look to America for sources of inspiration, because America has produced many powerful movements in the last few decades, women's movement, anti-war movement, both recently and in the time of Vietnam, the anti-globalization movement in Seattle. So, no, I don't think the American people are sleeping, but maybe it's time to get a little more organized and a little more active. They have shown examples of that in the past. They can do that again, I believe.
Well, you know, you might be right. It might just be our news media. You know, they don't tend to, like, for instance, we have a big immigration thing happening now, and, you know, we don't necessarily see the thousands and thousands of people that are showing up to fight against, you know, what some people think are unfair immigration policies that are going on in Arizona. But yet, you know, the media will show up at these teabagger rallies, which are the conservative right, and they, the problem with them, unfortunately, I don't know if you're following it, is, but, you know, they sort of you know, they don't always have their facts straight, and, you know, they just seem like, you know, they're mad at the wrong people. I mean, they don't even know their movement, like during healthcare, was financed by the healthcare industry, you know. So you know, they don't have a whole lot of credibility, you know, from some, you know, corners of, you know, of people in the United States, because it seems like they're being propped up by the very people they really should be angry with. But, you know, who knows? But they're the ones getting the attention in the media, unfortunately. We're not, you know, seeing these other people, you know, out there in the streets. So I think it sometimes gives the impression that, you know, nobody's causing a stir, nobody's protesting but these crazy teabaggers.
Well, there is work to be done, that's for sure.
Well, tell me, how do Greeks look at what's going on here in the United States? I mean, just overall with the oil spill, with the tea baggers. I mean, do you get that in Greek news? Can you follow what's happening here?
Yes, more or less. And yes, people have been upset by the oil spill, but they've also been, I think they've been encouraged by the efforts to establish good health care for the American people. I think they see that as a positive step.
So as far as health care goes, do the Greek people have a health care system that's, sort of like a public health care system like in, most of the other industrialized world, or are you guys paying for your own, health care completely like so many of us are?
Well, both are true. We do have a public health care system, but we also have to pay for our insurance, whether it's public or private. But the public healthcare system does have a lot of problems, many shortages. I'm sure the cutbacks are going to affect hospitals. Hospitals are understaffed. Nurses and doctors are unemployed at the same time. Isn't that ironic?
Mm.
And yes, the state does pay a lot of money to maintain the public healthcare system, but it's not a very efficient healthcare system, so we don't get the best of treatments when we need it. Sometimes people have to resort to private hospitals to avoid the public healthcare system. So
yeah,
I can't say things are good here in this regard. I'd say we need to do some serious work here too regarding healthcare.
Well, I think we need serious work in all different areas across the globe. Well, Harita, I don't want to keep this all political because I do want people to know more about your books and your work. So I know we said we were going to keep this to about 45 minutes, so your call's not so long. But before we go, let's make sure we mention your website and your books and your latest article in Sacred History Magazine. Why don't you tell listeners a little bit about, if they can find your books? I know you have one on the Women's Olympics, I believe, and...
Yes, Women's Olympics is one of my books, which is in English. It's the only one so far. And you can find it through my website, www.hmeenwe.com. Or you can just Google it. If you Google Harita Mini, the Women's Olympics, I'm sure you'll find it. And you can order it from here, from Greece. Also, yes, my recent article on the Women's Olympics was published in Sacred History magazine. One of my translations was recently published too, The Ode to Aphrodite by Sappho. It was published in an anthology dedicated to Aphrodite. It's called Crown of Violets. And
okay.
I'm waiting for my new book to be published soon, within the next few months, only it's not going to be in English, it's going to be in Spanish. Because the publisher is in Spain. This is the newest version of my first book on neopaganism.
Okay. Well, Harita, we've been talking about a lot of different subjects. Is there anything that we haven't covered that, any idea about the female philosophers or, anything else you'd like to leave listeners with that we haven't discussed already?
I would very much like to recommend to our listeners to go to the movies and see the film I mentioned earlier, Agora. It's not just another historical movie. We've seen a lot of historical movies from Hollywood. And, most of the time they're not very accurate and they're not very interesting either. This is a different kind of movie. I found it very, very touching and very, very enlightening at the same time. So I would wholeheartedly recommend to people to actually go and see it.
Okay, and you gave me the website here for anyone that wants to look it up. It's agorathemovie.com, A-G-O-R-A, themovie.com. And you might be able to also see something on YouTube. It seems like there's a YouTube site about the movie. And Harita's website, again, is H-M-E-E-N-E-E.com. Well, Harita, thank you so very much for calling in tonight and being a guest again on Voices of Sacred Feminine. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It was a pleasure for me to talk to you and to our listeners.
Well, and I look forward to your next trip back here in the United States. Will that be anytime soon?
Well, I don't know about that. I would certainly hope so, but we'll see.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to it. And thank you again, and the best of luck with your new book, and thanks for telling us about the movie about Hypatia Agora.
You're welcome.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values and benchmarks just will save the world. And our guest today was the delightful Harita Meany, calling from across the blue waters of the Mediterranean Sea. Oh, how I'd love to be able to get away for a month, rent a little place, you know, one of those white houses perched precariously on the side of the Greek island cliffs with those picturesque blue doors overlooking the sea. Ah, wow. It would be fun to be there and write a new book, maybe. Might be inspired. Well, anyway, I am going to take a very brief minute here to get ready for What's the Buzz. And as I do that, I am going to leave you with a short clip of a song called Nomad's Land by Zingaya. So stay with me. I will really only be gone for a minute. For What's the Buzz, and I want to share with you the June Astro Flash by an astrologer friend of mine whose work I always think is very reliable. Her name is Flash Silvermoon. You can find her website, flashsilvermoon.com. She's a really talented woman. Not only is she an astrologer, she's an animal whisperer. She has her own radio show on internetvoicesradio.com, where I actually started, called What the Animals Tell Me. Of course, she's a musician. We play some of her music and and songs on the show. So that's flashsilvermoon.com. But she puts out a monthly astro flash, and I want to read this one to you. It really caught my eye for the month of June. So I'm going to just read it here. And these are the words of Flash Silvermoon. All I can say is, if you think May was wild and unpredictable, wait till you see the June fireworks. I know that's supposed to happen on the 4th of July, but we are definitely on the fast track to extreme changes. These will not be clearly visible for the first few days because Mars and Neptune's opposition will place a layer of fog over everything, allowing for a kind of stealth shift and change that creeps up behind the scenes. Could even be some kind of botched attack again, Flash says. Big deal was when Uranus entered Aries on May 27th. Any time one of the outer planets changes sign, major shifts are afoot. Uranus is the planet of rebellion, genius, freedom, independence, separation, electricity, and unconventional behavior. Put that in the fiery sign Aries, which tends to leap and then look. One can only imagine the kind of energies we will experience. On top of that, expansive Jupiter will join Uranus in Aries at midnight June 6th Eastern Time. The reason I give the time is because I've known Uranian transits to be very exact in their manifestation, kind of like lightning. Whatever Uranus is up to, Jupiter will make it larger. I'm wondering if something explosive might happen, and it could also be something very positive in terms of some global humanitarian effort. Aries is ruled by the planet Mars and is the signature of the warrior. It would not be unlikely for wars to break out, treaties might be violated, corporations could crumble or totally change style and direction. I'm going to interject something here. Considering how BP's stock price fell drastically yesterday, and considering what's happening in Israel, those couple things pop to mind. Okay, back to the Astro Flash. Radicals of every stripe, from the left and the right, will likely be in the streets for one thing or another. This is the beginning of some level of revolt against the status quo, finally. I don't mean just the teabaggers in the streets and anti-Obama rhetoric, but a real challenging of the system itself on many levels. This is no time for fear. I thought this part here was very important, listeners, so I want to punctuate this. This is no time for fear. And it is important not to absorb any media paranoia or attempt to continue the fear-mongering, which only pushes us all further into a hard place where we get frozen in regressive behaviors. Truly, this can be a time of total inspiration, creativity, and discovery that opens us to living the conscious, congruent lives we dream about. The drive for freedom and independence could feel extreme depending on your particular astrological chart. In relationships of every kind, you may want to listen to the lyrics of her rock tune. She has a CD, and her second CD, If Your Heart Ain't In It, Get Your Ass Out, that's the name of it. She says, hear or download from my music page on her website at flashsilvermoon.com. The title does tell the story. If your heart ain't in it, get your ass out, just to repeat. The more confining and inauthentic your life feels, the more likely you will be fleeing to find the nearest exit. If you're feeling restless and have an inner knowing that you need to make some big personal changes, do it now before you feel compelled and less likely to make a good decision. The rumbling will only get louder, so get your ducks in a row. This could be the leap of faith time for many, and I can see where all the intuitive channels may be blown open. If opening your third eye has been part of your journey, expect potent quantum leaping on many levels. If you have a desire for this wisdom, a dream of a freer life, ideas about being your own boss, this is the time to self-actualize and go for it. At the same time, one will need to pace oneself and guard against recklessness. The last time Uranus was in Aries, now listen to this, listeners, Gandhi's civil disobedience movement was awakening, but Hitler began his rise, and the New Deal was an offering to heal the Great Depression. We could also see a return to great accomplishments in outer space, as well as miraculous discoveries for healing. The summer solstice on June 22nd should be quite amazing, with a grand trine in water signs tempering all the Uranian fireworks. She says it's a great time for making magic, and that's what they're going to be doing at Moonhaven. Now, if you go to Flash's website, flashsilvermoon.com, you will find her astro flash. You can look up your zodiac sign, and you can see what she says you particularly might expect. But I just thought this message for June was so very important. So remember, don't let media paranoia get to you. Don't feed into the fear mongering. This is can be a time for very positive change, change like we all have been working toward. Okay, now, and, you know, this sort of all works in together. You know, I said earlier at the top of the show about women changing the world, and I don't see it happening using this type of methods that are out there today, you know, the patriarchal methods, the dominator methods, the traditional status quo type methods. I think when women, you know, finally do come into their power, they will just naturally, by their natural intuitive selves, do things differently. And it's, and I look at it like this. I look at it as, for instance, a great analogy. If you're looking for a job, of course you do the traditional thing. You send out a resume. You look in the paper. You apply. You do those things. But you know what? You also do your focused intention, whether you call it prayer, whether you call it magic, it's all the same thing. You do that at your home altar, okay? So I think this is a little bit like that. That's the way women are going to do things a little bit differently. It's not just going to be all the left brain stuff. Which ties into the next topic I want to talk about in What's the Buzz, which is the Red Spiral Dance. Some women I know, in part inspired by Roberta Canto on the show recently, she's the documentary filmmaker of that trilogy, Blood Time, Moon Time, Dream Time. Well, some of you contact me who saw her film, who heard her talk, and you had dreams about, you know, the things that, you know, the images that that Roberta and I talked about were in her film. And some of you started saying that you were seeing women in red twirling, 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 and the twirling seemed to represent breaking the shackles of oppression, so that women could first set themselves free and then go about starting to change the world. Isn't that just, it just feels so authentic to so many of us. Feels like intuitively just, you know, one thing, you know, some of us can do, you know, at home, you know, in our backyard, at our home altar, or in groups, you know, can do this. And let me explain a little bit more about it in case you'd like to join. So many of us who are spreading this all around, here's sort of some backstory. Inspired by the state of things, the Gulf catastrophe, the exploitation of people in the name of corporate greed, all the abuse and imbalance and death at the hands of the status quo, it seems there's a movement afoot among priestesses of Hecate, Sekhmet, Kali, Yemaya, women everywhere from all walks of life to activate change. That being said, if any of you are feeling called by what I'm about to describe, join us. If you have Facebook, go to Red Spiral Dance. The women there are advocating meditation and prayer by twirling, twirling, unfurling, unfurling, and unwinding and unwinding. Many are seeing the women dressed in red. Some are calling for the twirling to be done in a counterclockwise direction. They feel intuitively as they twirl and twirl, they unlearn the patriarchal programming. They heal the damage to their psyche. They unleash, they unfurl, they unwirl our power and wisdom. They reconnect to our innate natural female spiritual authority, as Vajrama likes to call it. They are seeking to remove the glamour from our minds, their minds, and the shackles on our lives. So many women everywhere can find. They'll recognize their path toward being the change that changes the world. Isn't that beautiful? They find their path toward being the change that changes the world. One of the women posted on the Red Spiral Dance site, she said, yes, serpent spirals are universal spiritual symbols. And when we create those spiral energy vortexes in joyful movement with intention, we also create what is called Ling in Chinese, creative potency to influence the heavens and make a positive difference. And she talks about there's an attachment there of a serpent spiral and dream symbolism and things like that. But really, you know, go to Red Spiral Dance on Facebook. Or you know what, if you don't have Facebook, you don't need Facebook. This is not something you can do wrong. You just, like the whirling dervishes, and as one woman reminded me, the word dervish means door. We are stepping through a threshold. We are stepping through a door. We are trying to connect to the source, to empower ourselves, you know, to reach and touch our intuitive gifts. So do it. See how it feels. Women have, you know, reported wonderful feedback. And you know what? It might be subtle, it might be profound, I don't know, but I would love to hear from you. So let me know what you think, because remember, sisters and brothers in partnership, we must ready ourselves with our left brains and our right brains. We must be her voice and goddess. Well, you know, I call her the dark horse coming up from behind to win the race. And doesn't it sound like fun to connect with her using the Red Spiral Dance? All right, so let's go forth in the world with Kuan Yin on one shoulder, who pours out her compassion and nurturing to those in need, and Sekhmet on the other shoulder, who will devour the evildoers for the plague they let loose on the land. I intentionally keep saying, stand up, find your voice. Where is your roar? We can't be ignorant. We can't be complacent. Align yourself and cast your vote with those who measure themselves by their service and their humanity, not their bank books and their loyalty to the green god of greed and corporations destroying lives and Mother Earth. Know the difference, listeners. Don't support people who would throw your ideals and the ideals of our great mother under the bus. Well, that concludes our What's the Buzz segment for today. And we're going to skip over announcements and go directly to our closing prayer. And it's sent from the Goddess Temple of Orange County. I tithe regularly to them, and in the mail I get a monthly prayer, and this is the one that came tonight. So I invite you to close your eyes and take a deep breath with me, sort of just let everything else we've been talking about just sort of fall away for the moment. Bring yourself to a deeper focus. Breathe in and out, in and out. If you feel like it, take a big cleansing breath and let loose anything in there you want out. Great Goddess, living, moving, and breathing in woman, throughout all challenges of this physical world, we women have prevailed in beauty. We are grateful for the eternal, divine, female power that lives in each of us, giving us all we need to carry on the human race. Wow. Well, listeners, thank you for tuning in. I hope you'll be back with us next Wednesday night at our regular time of 6 p.m. Pacific when I interview my guest, Shirley Rank. Now, you might not automatically recognize her name, but she is a very important woman. She is the author of that important feminist theology program, Cakes for the Queen of Heaven, Reclaiming Women's Religious History. And please remember, stay tuned with us during the summer, our summer series, because I've planned some great guests. On the 16th of June, Helen Hai-Sook Hwang is part of the Sacred Knowledge series. We are going to be discussing discovering the great goddess Mago of East Asia and Magoism. Sandra Kirkpatrick will also be on the 16th at the bottom of the hour. She is hard at work fighting human trafficking, especially of women, and she's going to give us some updates about what's happening in Haiti, because Haiti has sure fallen out of the news. Then on the 23rd, as part of our Sacred Destination series, we have Marguerite Rigoglioso. She is returning to the show. She is going to be discussing Tunisia and the Amazons. You don't want to miss that. And our final Wednesday of the month, Stephen Geringer from the Joseph Campbell Foundation staff. He will be the first gentleman on the show for the summer's Men and Goddess series. Well, that's all till next Wednesday. Good night, and may the great She embrace you in her golden wings.